Hello, everybody. I want to welcome you to this session of the Great Books program here at Ubiquity University. It's a graduate seminar where each year we cover six books, one every 2 months, and we invite various people of note, most particularly our students who, like Georgie Azabo and myself, love to read books. And so you are halfway through the presentation on Leonardo da Vinci by Margot Borden, one of our recent PhD graduates. So I'll just turn the session over to you, Margot. And I think all of you know the drill. Margot will present her material, and then I'll circle back and we will have a dialogue with you. So I want all of you students to raise your hands when she's done, and then we'll have a good dialogue. Thank you, everyone. Margot.
Let's see. Hi. Oh, maybe I'll stop my share for a minute. Hi, everyone. I hope you had a good month in between sessions. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And so in the last session, I really deepened into the seven qualities that help us to develop our own unique genius. And then many of you asked for the presentation, which had exercises and points for reflection. And I hope that you got a chance to, to really ponder and explore for yourself and find out just how enriching and just how it wakes up our minds and our senses. And as we ponder Da Vinci's unfathomable mind and the concept of genius, maybe you told yourself, I'm not a genius. I'll never be a genius. Some of us do that to ourselves. It's maybe part of the human condition. We think we're ordinary. We undermine ourselves. How many ways do we limit ourselves? In how many ways? And what would our lives be like if we took our feet off the brakes and let ourselves soar into our unique potential? Just sit with that for a second. What would it be like to take your foot off the brakes and just only need the accelerator and open up to all of who you can be? So one of the beautiful things about this book is that it isn't about identifying the rare geniuses of the world, but about finding and developing our own inner genius. And so Da Vinci described himself as uomo senza lettere, the man without letters. And he also described himself as discepolo della esperienza, disciple of experience. So it's like the beginner's mind, isn't it? We and yet we don't undermine ourselves, but we keep ourselves curious and open and exploring. So each one of us is endowed with gifts that are our own. And through the seven principles, you can bring your own gifts to light and share them with the world. When we find and our spark and integrate it into what we bring into the world, each one of us has the potential to light up or one or even millions of lives. There's no calling too small and no calling too big. We each have to follow our own lives. So I want to start by telling you how I apply the seven principles. And for that, I'm going to share my screen. Okay. So many years ago, I took a training with Michael Gelb, the author of the book. And he's a great speaker, very engaging, and charismatic. And I was just enthralled, and we were all just enthralled. We were at the Omega Institute in upstate New York. And there was a break, and I always would go out. There's forests and beautiful lawns to walk around the Institute. And I'm walking around the Institute with one of the people from the training. And he said to me, "So what have you learned so far?" And I went blank. And I scoured my mind. I tried to find an answer. And what came out was nothing, but I'm using my mind differently. So that gives you an idea that it's really what it brings out in each of us. There's no one way to be a genius or to develop your genius. So apart from being aware that I can be awake in my own mind and to my own mind and use it differently, use it consciously. When I was doing my PhD dissertation, I integrated the seven principles into my research methodology. So if we look at the elements of the aspects of heuristic inquiry, there's a strong correlation and complementarity between the aspects of heuristic inquiry and Gelb's seven principles of thinking like Leonardo da Vinci. So if we start with immersion and incubation, it corresponds to the first principle, curiosità, our mentality of perpetual curiosity and thirst for learning. And then if we go down, and then immersion, in for me, how I use the immersion both in the heuristic and in the Da Vinci sense is meditation, breath work, lots of reading. But reading, and in all of these activities, listening to my whole self. So all of the faculties, the ears, the felt sense in the body, the heart, the intuition, the dreams. Dialogues with my peers, paying close attention, and cultivating all the dimensions, as I said, while I was exploring my topic for my PhD dissertation. Then we come to incubation, which means really stepping back from the immersion phase and letting the topic work via the default mode network of the brain, which is the daydream network that corresponds to the regions of the brain that are active when the brain is awake and at rest. And you know, that kind of your passive and wow, stuff is happening. We're getting insights without looking for them. So we're at rest and at attention, and we're not directing our attention to anything. And so that's the incubation. We come down to the next principle of heuristic inquiry, which is illumination, which we can find in many of the Da Vincian principles. So in illumination, we take a deeper look at the material, which involves both introspection and analysis. This corresponds to Gelb's second through seventh principles, dimostrazione, putting our knowledge to the test and reframing it where necessary. Sensazione, the continual refinement of the senses, especially sight, to enliven experience. So this is a little bit of a recall from last month. Sfumato, which is openness to embrace nuance, ambiguity, contradiction, and uncertainty. Arte scienza, engaging the whole brain to explore the balance between science and art, logic and imagination. And we do a lot of that at Ubiquity, really balancing both hemispheres of the brain in what we do. Corporalità, which is developing elegance, versatility, physical well-being, and composure, a relationship to the body, embodiment. Connessione, which is perceiving the underlying interconnection and wholeness of everything. It's systems thinking. For the final aspect of heuristic inquiry, explication, it corresponds to three of the Da Vincian principles. So explication is drawing out and explicating the knowledge and meanings from the inner and outer dimensions. And it corresponds to dimostrazione, arte scena, and connessione. The final phase, synthesis, relates to Gelb's connessione, engaging our inner and outer faculties to bring everything together. So connessione, the interconnection of everything, the underlying oneness of everything. So the final way that I use it consciously and intentionally, these principles in my life is that before I sit down to write, I'll open the book and do a random practice to build my focus, my concentration, and it also builds my creative thinking. And I think we know the difference sitting down and writing or studying cold or sitting down after some breath work or after, you know, a walk in the forest or after, you know, a Da Vincian exercise. So for the next part of this class, we're going to have a fireside chat with Leonardo da Vinci. Welcome, Leonardo. Thank you for being here with us. So, Leonardo, I have some questions for you. If you could speak to us across the centuries, how would you feel about people dedicating so much care to studying your life and drawing out lessons for creative living? What do you wish that we understood most about your approach to life? And Leonardo responds, I'm pleased that minds remain restless after so many turns of the sun. Yet I say, let no one be content with mere imitation. My drawings, my inventions, and questions were the fruits of a ceaseless hunger to know, to feel, to connect what was never connected before. Think about that for a moment and how we're doing that in our writing, in our studying, to make space to find the connections. If you're moved, here comes Leonardo again, if you're moved by my life, rather than follow my steps, awaken the same thirst in your own heart. Genius is not a relic, but a living current. Seek it through questions, careful seeing, and daring to wander where the mind is drawn. And here's me asking Leonardo the next question. Many call you a genius, as if genius is something magical or inevitable. But reading about your early life, I wonder how much of your growth was due to fate or natural talent, and how much came from your environment and habits, nature or nurture. And Leonardo responds, fate may cast seed, but it is the diligent gardener who tends the plant. My birth beyond the city's walls and ways left me free. I wandered fields and watched rivers, observed birds and faces. The world became my teacher, my sketchbook. Genius is not only gift, but toil and wonder, a tapestry woven of curiosity, observation, and relentless inquiry. And my next question to you, Leonardo, thank you for that beautiful answer. Gelb wrote about seven principles that shaped your genius. Do these capture your approach? And Leonardo responds, they're faithful to my way, but let them not be stone tablets. Wonder is the chief architect. Let curiosity lead you to try, fail, taste, see, balance, and connect. To press the senses keenly to the world, to dance between certainty and mystery, to let art and science be one. This is the true path. The mind's gift unfurls most when it knows itself incomplete and seeks more from every encounter. So we're really encountering curiosità, which is the key behind everything in all of the seven qualities. We need to be curious and question our assumptions. So, Da Vinci, let's go over the next, the seven steps, just briefly again, but in your language, in your words, rather than Gelb's. So, curiosità, the passion to question everything, allowing no assumption to go unexamined. Dimostrazione, to question, to test your ideas with experience and experiment, and to welcome mistakes. Remember the lesson from last time when I talked about, who was it? The guy who invented the light bulb, I forgot his name. And how he said that he hadn't failed. He had discovered 200 ways in which his attempts to develop a light bulb didn't work. So failure is interesting. So, and I think one thing we do is when we fail, we say, I'm a failure. But actually, if we just say, I tried this and failed, or it didn't work, rather than shaming ourselves with it, it leaves a lot of room for growth. The next quality is sensazione, to train and delight your senses. It's the gateway to new knowledge. Sfumato, to tolerate mystery and paradox, and to rest in uncertainty and let it ripen. And there were some exercises in the handout last time about that. Arte e scienza, to unite the imagination of art and the rigor of science within one mind. Corporalità, to honor the wisdom of the body, moving, sensing, and balancing its grace. And connessione, the final one, to see that all things bind together, that every detail is connected to a whole. Master these steps not in haste, but through daily practice, open-hearted inquiry, and unending wonder. So that again, they're more like a journey than a destination, a constant journey of discovery. Thank you, Leonardo. And my next question is, how does one go about gleaning out principles of creativity and genius from a life or a practice? Is it possible for every person to distill their own guiding principles? Oops. Go the right way. Okay. Look to your habits, not with harsh judgment, but with keen observation. My ways were formed from repeated marveling, experimenting, and reflection. Write, draw, record questions and revelations in your own notebook. Principles reveal themselves to those who look often at their lives, who dialogue with experience and dare to question their assumptions. If you were to advise us about... Yes, we're on the right track here. If you were, Leonardo, if you were to advise us about finding our own life spring of inspiration, where would you instruct us to begin? Begin with wonder, with a question that stirs your mind or a sensation that catches your breath. Attend to your senses. Look long, listen deeply, taste and touch, and smell the world in all its freshness. Inspiration is a river. Be patient and playful as you wade in its waters. And when confusion comes, rest and return anew. Thank you, Leonardo. Today, the world today feels as if it's spinning in crisis. Our climate growing unstable, economies dividing, politics polarizing, and the very spirits of community thinning. In your own time, you witnessed upheaval. What wisdom would you offer us for facing so many simultaneous challenges? Nature, when nature suffers, so too suffers the soul of humankind. I observed that nature is a source of truth. Experience does not ever err. It is only your judgment that errs in promising itself results which are not caused by your experiments. To heal the crises you describe, begin with humility before nature and attention to experience. Protect and honor the earth, act with reverence, and do not let greed eclipse wonder. Remember, necessity guides nature's laws, but human folly distorts them. Each person must cultivate discernment, charity, and a willingness to see the whole, not just the part, a practice as vital now as ever. And I'd like to just bring out this something about what Leonardo just said here, that when we watch over ourselves, we're usually watching ourselves with judgment and harshness and building cases against ourselves. But in order to see ourselves and our lives and the issues that the world is facing today, it's more helpful to see it through compassion, through neutrality or equanimity. And when we do that, there's no emotional charge. So we see things more as they are, and we're more empowered to make choices and not get caught up in negative spirals. So where are we? Okay. My next question for Da Vinci. In a world where technology races ahead, sometimes without ethical restraint, and economic and political systems are often twisted by personal interest, how can we balance innovation with responsibility and justice? Oh, here we are. In seeking truth, one must strive to be good, not only with skill in craft or science, but in virtue and intention. So again, it's not just, we talked about this a month ago, not just what we do, but the attitude with which we do it that infuses, that adds to the collective upliftment or downfall. The fruits of invention, continues Da Vinci, must serve the common good, not only private gain. I would demand rigorous questioning of the consequences of new arts and sciences. If you build machines, let them serve beauty and harmony, not destruction. Let every act, every creation, answer not only to reason, but to conscience. Ask always, does this serve the flourishing of life? In times of distrust, build trust by revealing your methods and seeking wisdom from many voices, not just powerful ones. Thank you, Leonardo. Do you see a path to spiritual renewal or ethical harmony from fragmentation to wholeness? Is there hope for society, and how should we nurture it? Everything is inextricably connected. Begin by tending the connections within yourself, body, mind, and spirit. Then foster them in your communities and in the wider world. To restore harmony is to recognize each part as sacred and each life as meaningful. Practice patience, generosity, and awe. Nurture education, compassion, and dialogue. Even amidst discord, the spirit's renewal comes in small acts. A kind word, a just decision, a quiet moment spent in nature or with loved ones. The Renaissance was born from questioning and rediscovering our bond with nature and the divine. So too, today, you must ask new questions and seek new balance. Thank you. But today we find ourselves in a time of overwhelming information overload, misinformation, uncertainty, and chaos, sometimes much like the world before the Renaissance began, the Dark Age. If you were among us, Leonardo, what would you say about the state of humanity right now? Could we be approaching another kind of renaissance? The times of confusion are the womb of renewal. I just love that. And it's also found in Betty Kovach's book. I think I talked about this in the last class, that when we're confused, there's room for the new to emerge. When the world seems tangled and sense almost lost, new seeds are planted in the dark. If people renew their curiosity, stop clinging to old certainties and look again, dawn dwells just behind the horizon. Every now and then, go away. Have a little relaxation. But when you come back to your work, your judgment will be surer. Retreat, reflect, and return. Thus is the new day born. Thank you, Leonardo. Would you advise us in the face of this flood of information, environmental crisis, and what would you advise us in the face of this flood of information, environmental crisis, and the apparent loss of common sense? Beware the torrent that drowns truth. Seek to listen closely and observe with care. Test the world with your own senses and reason. Connect to nature. She's the evergreen teacher. Common sense is born from practice, humility, and reverence for what we do not know. Common sense is born from practice, humility, and reverence for what we do not know. He who loves practice without a theory is like the sailor who boards a ship without a rudder and compass and never knows where he may cast. Thank you. I see many people holding strong opinions and closed minds on politics, technology, even matters of spirit. If I want to discuss ideas like extraterrestrial life or the positive uses of AI, sometimes I encounter stubbornness or ridicule, and sometimes aggressive, being brushed off with aggressivity. How would you encourage me to respond? Closed minds are prisons of the soul. Light enters through kindness, example, and gentle questions. Do not seek to conquer another's certainty with force, but invite wonder with humility. All our knowledge has its origin in our perceptions. Moments of shared curiosity open the door little by little. Stand firm in your wonder and listen. Sometimes silence is the best teacher. Have a feeling many of us have encountered these kind of conversation with people who are in certainty or discounting our curiosity. And it's hard to maintain neutrality, to not get triggered, and sometimes silence is all we can do. So where are we? So Leonardo, is there something you feel inspired to share with the students and seekers those of us who are reading and reflecting and hoping to live more creatively today. Life is long, art is younger. Here, no mistake. For each failure is a step closer to understanding. Encourage curiosity and kindness, and let beauty be your guide. The Renaissance is not a past event, but a habit of mind renewed daily by those bold enough to question and create. Art lives from appreciation. Let your journey shine with wonder, and may you never stop asking why. Thank you, Leonardo. Thank you so much for coming here today. And now let's open to questions. Let's see. Yeah. Screen share off. Okay, here we are.
That was brilliant, Margo. Did you like channel that, or did you do a GPT chat? How did you do that? You were dropping one pearl of wisdom after another.
Took a little editing to condense it.
Wow. 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 Okay, everyone, let's get some hands up. But yeah. I would just start it off. When you did this kind of download from Leonardo, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that was actually done. Did you go into a meditative state? Or do you have experience in channeling ancestral energies and beings? Tell us how you did that.
So a lot of my papers that I wrote when I was doing my PhD, I think you know they I what I did is I did all my research, and then instead of writing a paper, I wrote a story, and there were dialogues. There was one where I was dialoguing with the Black Madonna in the
yeah, I remember
the lower church of Chartres. And so I think just trying to put myself in the shoes, first of all, having studied a little bit about the Renaissance and what preceded the Renaissance, and feeling that we're in a similar kind of dark age that a lot of us, many of us, I believe is going to be, you know, opening into a new era of light and awareness. So that, and then just I considered opening the Akashic Records, and then I thought that might be a little abusive. So I just tried to imagine and play with drawing out the concepts, mind mapping, and then like crafting the language.
Gotcha. So this is really your own honed technique over time to really deepen your own skills as a creative writer.
Yeah,
beautifully done.
Oh, thank you.
I really felt the presence of Leonardo. You know, when you asked the questions, I thought, "Woo-wee, I wonder what he's going to say." And he said pretty much what I think most of us would expect a great genius like Leonardo to say, you know, about creativity coming through questions and you know, just holding the expansiveness of the imagination. Yeah,
I think it was a fascinating time in history, and I mean, having just like even reading a sentence about Leonardo, you know, watching birds and then trying to design a flying, you know, machine, and it's like, wow. I had so many wow moments where my mind was just blown in this. How do you put all that together? How did you expand your mind to that extent that you see the depth and breadth and the interconnection of everything? It's so I yeah. sat that those feelings that arose as I read about him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and when you read his life, you know, among other things, he was living through the tumult of Italy at that time. You know, this was sort of Machiavelli's Italy. This was not just some paradise somewhere where everybody was hanging out. And, you know, there was war, there was pestilence, there was the plagues, there was the papal battles with the different principalities. You know, there was all kinds of machinations at the political, financial realms. The Medicis were extorting people. I mean, you know, Florence was bankrupt, and then going through the, and Savonarola was just around the corner. I mean, you know, this was like, it was a wild time. So this was
wow.
Genius in tumult.
And if you think about his life, the various people he worked for and moved, and, you know, he wasn't thought of as maybe as great as we think of him today. He was just some artisan or something working, and some people even considered him a failure because most of what he dreamed up never happened in his lifetime.
Well,
You know, he had
Michelangelo
notebooks.
too.
Sorry.
Michelangelo too, he died in complete penury. I mean, you know, the guy, he was bullied by the popes and ordered to do this and ordered to do that. And people didn't like his art and they thought it was too, you know, this or to that. And similarly with Leonardo. In fact, if I remember correctly, you know, he had to go up to Milan for a while because he couldn't get patrons anymore in Florence, and the Pope didn't like him. So, I mean, you know, he was these guys lived real lives of challenge. And
His thinking was so innovative that it threatened the dominance of the church. So of course, yeah, he's juggling a lot of different balls.
Yeah. Now, what did you find so attractive about Leonardo that you wanted to do one of our great books on his thought? Do you really resonate with him as a creative artist yourself, and that associating with him kind of empowers you to do your own creative work? So he's like, in some ways, a mentor. He's an ancestral mentor to you.
An inspiration for sure. It's part of, reading about him, seeing the notebooks, you know, seeing some of his artworks that open up, that touched something in me. And then reading the book, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, and seeing how it woke up, you know, the seven qualities in me, and watching how I shared in the last class, as I was preparing, I was making a minestra di verdure. It's just a vegetable and bean soup, which was Leonardo da Vinci's favorite food, and he was vegetarian. And so I put my minestra and all the fresh vegetables from the farm down the road, and they're in the pot boiling with a piece of Parmesan rind. Because that's what you do here. You put your Parmesan rinds in this, you keep them and you put them in the soup. And just rather than just saying soup or just like throw the soup on and go do something else, you smell each thing, the basil, the Parmesan, and it's like it wakes up and you start to differentiate what was just soup becomes all these wonderful ingredients from just down the road. And it was tomato season. It was wonderful. So it's really about waking up all of our senses and qualities. That's why I wanted to work on this book in this class. Yeah.
Well, you know, I just listened to Jane Goodall's famous last words. I don't know whether you've seen that.
But I saw your talk, and it's on my list of things to watch. Yeah.
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 But just for all of you out there, if you haven't seen Jane Goodall's last statement, it's on Netflix. But she did an interview with a gentleman, lasted about 45, 50 minutes before she died. as if she was leaving her last will and testament, knowing that it wouldn't be aired until after she died. It's an extraordinary thing. And the guy interviews her in that spirit. So it's a, in terms of a time warp, it's a beautiful, beautiful statement. And most of you know, I had a very long-standing friendship with her for many, many years, because she was part of the State of the World Forum. But you know, I bring it in, Margot, because she makes the same point that Leonardo makes, that nature is endlessly fascinating. Endlessly fascinating. And that once you slow down, like slowing down with the soup, once you slow down, which is what she had to do with the chimpanzee, she says, sometimes I would sit there all day and nothing would happen. I just sat there. And then, you know, and then it begins to unfold. But it was that acute observation and patience and curiosity that that created her greatness as Jane Goodall. And when you were laying out those points about Leonardo da Vinci, I thought that was Jane Goodall. And you could see she changed human perception of the natural world and the animal kingdom in particular through the chimpanzees, because she was the first one who slowed down long enough to realize they had personalities and they had foibles, and they were got up grouchy in the mornings, and they had good days and bad days. They fought, you know, they loved, they, you know, did all the stuff that we humans did, used tools. And she gave them names, which at that time was completely radical and heretical, in fact.
Yeah, I think the slow down and zoom in, and in the last class I talked about eliminating excess noise and distraction, which is like, I think the biggest barrier to our creativity and to our psycho-spiritual evolution, you know, screens and distractions and, you know, running after 100 things and doing, you know, really cell phones, I think. And when you take everything away and you just, you sit still, what looked like a pot of soup then becomes, you know, or what looks like a chimpanzee becomes a living being with a personality and emotions and, you know, character traits. And so it's the slow down and zoom in. And when we do that with ourselves, in therapy, I use that a lot. So someone will just say, I'm upset, or this, I don't like this. And it's like, okay, let's sit with, I don't like this. And you can zoom in like Google Map, you know, where it could be like Los Angeles, a pinpoint on your screen, or it can be, you know, every blade of grass and every, you know, tree and neighborhood and the people walking around that make up the neighborhoods so it's the slow down and zoom in. And I think the more we do that, the more we develop ourselves. And also, when you slow down and zoom in, you also see connect to the bigger picture. So it's not just we're focusing on the micro, you know, dots of everything, but we can connect it to the whole through stillness.
Now, do you know the life of Leonardo well enough to link those extraordinarily creative dispositions and principles that you've been articulating and how to think like Leonardo with certain events and experiences that he actually had in his life? Because oftentimes, you know, we learn obedience through what we suffer, as the scriptures say. So we have these illuminations out of very deep, either traumatic or somehow transformational experiences. What were those events in Leonardo's life?
So that was one of the questions that I kind of a question that I asked him. And it was, you know, like, is it nature or nurture that made you into who you are? But to get into specifics about events, I don't think I have that kind of knowledge. But it certainly makes me want to read more. And I know there's some brilliant books about his life. So there's a lot to be discovered.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't recollect. I've read about him before, but to my knowledge, the understanding of historians, he was gay, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think
that's my recollection. He was gay, and that, as when I read his life, I think that had a lot to do with it. He was also vegetarian,
yes.
So he had these certain, first of all, a sexual deviant, shall we say, and then a culinary deviance from the norm.
Yeah.
And it's that ability to be deviant in some way, you know, what I call a 13 and a 12 world, that allows you to get out of the box in the first place, right? You can't be completely conventional and completely normal and have any creativity at all.
Yeah. And I guess, definitely in those days, being homosexual would be considered deviant because it was such, you know, the church and everything.
Oh,
But
yeah.
Even today, I live in Italy and I'm vegetarian, and I've met one other vegetarian, and everywhere you go, I never imagined that it was such a heavy meat eating country. And it's like, it is difficult.
Yeah. So you can imagine 500 years ago in Florence.
So.
What do you consider his greatest work? Would you consider the Mona Lisa, the Last Supper, any of his other paintings? Because he was so prolific and so specific. You could spot a Leonardo da Vinci painting, you know, in a museum quite quickly, because it's a very specific, like a Michelangelo is very specific, very different than Leonardo.
Yeah. I think I don't I never really thought about it in those terms. I mean, I was in the Louvre and saw the Mona Lisa and tried to look at it from every angle and see what it is, the intrigue. And what do I think would be his greatest work? I think his notebooks for me, the scribbles of all the wild, you know, ideas that he came up with that show you the expansiveness and the depth and the interconnectivity that he saw in things. And it was just, and where you don't put the brakes on your own mind, you're just like exploring everything that crosses your mind. And by doing that, some pieces come to fruition and become something, and others just sit in a notebook, but that you're not you don't censor yourself. You don't
Exactly.
Just say, here it is. Here's what my mind is delivering up.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And then just finally, as you've reflected over 2 months now and read the book, and are there any particular qualities of Leonardo's that you find to be foundational? I mean, you listed a whole number of them, but as you've experienced all this, what would be the singular quality, or say one or two qualities that you're taking away from your exploration of Leonardo?
So I think if I look at the seven qualities that, you know, Gelb found in his book, the quality of curiosity, curiosità, it's kind of infiltrated into all the seven qualities. And I think it's the key to our aliveness. The mental aliveness, the physical aliveness, the heart-centered aliveness. If we're curious about everything, and we shouldn't be distracted or, you know, going all over the place, but if you're open to exploring, questioning everything, I think that to me is is the key. And it's also, I think, keeps our minds young and healthy.
Yeah. Curiosity. And as Socrates said, the only thing that he knew for sure is that he didn't know anything. You know, that curiosity is also, I think, in my mind, associated with a disposition of questioning. I think curiosity and inquiry are in some ways two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Because if you need, but you need, they complement each other, because if you have inquiry without curiosity, when we look at one of the qualities, art and science, you know, science gives structure and rigor, and art gives creativity and, you know, the bringing the unseen world into physical form, in the form of art, and they balance each other out beautifully. And if you look at maybe art without structure or rigor, you know, it might be, you know, a jellyfish or something without, you know, something that we can distinguish and make meaning from. And if you look at science without art, I don't need to say anything more about that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We close ourselves into a tiny little box where we don't have room to breathe and take care of ourselves and our planet.
Totally, totally, totally. Well, Margo, thank you so much. This has been a beautiful, I would say almost sublime discourse on Leonardo over the last couple of months, because there is something very elevated about Leonardo, something very ethereal, you know, even in contrast with Michelangelo, who was in the earth and very terrestrial. There was something, as I've experienced, and I think you captured in your delivery, is something that is very ethereal. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Very and then we'll see you next next month, everybody, for the grand finale of the year, which will be Dr. Szabo for November and December's final book of the year. And then we're going to have the syllabus up soon. I'm the only one that hasn't chosen his books for next year, but I'm working on it. And I told Georg and Georgie I'd have them done by the end of the week. So we'll be posting the syllabus for 2026 very shortly. Thank you so much, Margo.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, everyone. It's been a pleasure. Bye.